At the same time he was creating episodes of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy for BBC Radio 4, Douglas Adams was commissioned to do some writing for Doctor Who. According to Adams, the first episode of The Hitchhiker's Guide more or less coincided with the summer period at the BBC, where in order for anything to get approved, you have to wait for people to come back from whichever beach they're lying on. So that took a long time. While I was kicking my heels, I sent in my pilot episode to the then script editor, Doctor Who, Robert Holmes, who said, yes, yes, like this. Come around and see us. So we discussed ideas for a bit, and I eventually got commissioned to write 4 Doctor Who episodes. It took a long time to reach that decision, and then, after all this period of nothing happening, I was suddenly commissioned to write 4 Doctor Who episodes and the next 5 Hitchhikers all at once. And I wanted to start with that to let people know I mentioned before that I was going to tie Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy in with Doctor Who because I used to always put it in my Doctor Who list of stories with the close ties to the Hitchhiker stories. So look for that in upcoming episodes of Brain Leakage. Return of Dr. Mysterio. Credits: directed by Ed Bizilget, written by Stephen Moffat, starring Peter Capaldi as the 12th Doctor, companion Matt Lucas, others Justin Chatwin and Charity Wakefield. So Mar, what do you think about the return of Dr. Mysterio?
Dr. Mysterio, there's no S.
The return of Doctor Who is what it was.
It's not really a secret that I'm not, like, a huge fan of Doctor Who, but I really did not like this episode. Like, there are some that I like. Like, I like the Christopher Eccleston ones. I like the current Doctor, Capaldi. I did not like this episode. I liked the premise of, like, a superhero and stuff, but it was cloying, okay? Like, the guy who... I forget his name, but he's, like, fucking, like, Goku from Dragon Ball Z movie. Like,
that, oh, that is yeah, where he was
he's,
from.
He's, like, the terrible guy. Like, okay. Isn't that his character's name? He's Goku?
Yeah,
thank or whatever, you. Like, and he's, like, from Shameless and stuff. And, like, I'm sorry, he was cloying as fuck. You know, he's that guy that she doesn't see, you know, forever and ever. And then, finally, she finds him and he was there all along. Like, I'm sorry, it was fucking annoying and it was cloying as fuck. And I was annoyed by the whole episode. The end.
See, I enjoyed it to a certain extent because, like, with the Christmas specials, a lot of people don't like a lot of them because, like, they're not meant...
They're one-off for, kind
yeah,
of
things. And yeah, and they're meant to be as mass audience appeal as they can be. I enjoyed it, but I also think it seemed too gimmicky.
It was very gimmicky.
It was like, we're going to do a Doctor Who, superhero episode, but it seemed like it read almost like fanfic in a way because it didn't have a professional structure to it, I don't think. Like, I didn't mind his character.
I minded.
I think all of it could have been written better, I think is the main problem. All of it could have been written better and structured better and worked out better. I just seemed like it seemed really rushed to me and stuff. I liked all the casting in it and stuff like that. I didn't like the fact that the Doctor really does hardly anything in it.
He barely does anything. I also, like, I liked the premise of those, like, aliens that were taking over people and stuff. I thought they looked really stupid when they split the person's head open, though, and, like, went on a diagonal and then, like, flipped open. And I was just like, nearly had this. How can you nearly have this?
Yeah. I didn't mind that as much. It kind of
looked dumb.
My first thought was it reminded me of Slytherin. How they had the zippers, remember?
Oh, the Slovene?
Yeah, the farting ones.
Or whatever.
Like, I didn't mind any of the characters or any of that stuff. I just thought the execution of it was really bad. I actually liked the fact that how he was a superhero with him swallowing the thing. And by the way, Peter Capaldi is great with kids. His acting, like, his doctor is great, really good,
really good
with it. Like, I didn't mind all that. I just thought it was executed very badly. It reminded me, like, when people write Superman, who really aren't good writers, they really don't do it very well.
Yeah.
And that was basically what this was. It was basically a Superman story.
Yeah, it was, yeah. And there were parts that I thought were really good. Like, I thought he did do a really good job with the younger versions of the kid. Like, when he pops back up and the boy's, like, in puberty and he's, like, in hell because he can't, like, you know, like, he can't look at anybody because he sees them naked and, like, all that shit. But then, I don't know, like, the guy's an adult, and then he's, like, being the nanny for the girl that he was in love with forever, and, you know, I don't know, it was fucking creepy. I was creeped out by him.
I think it would have been better if they, I know they tried to
and
do.
And then the doctor pops up and he, like, doesn't really do much.
I think, like, they tried to do, like, a Superman thing, and I think they would have been better off if they just did their own superhero, you know what I mean? Not try to make him a Superman archetype, is that the word for you?
Yeah,
archetype,
well, and they tried to play on, like things from Superman,
yeah,
too.
That's what I mean, like, they have a Lois character, and they have a Superman character, and basically
and the whole thing where he just puts on his glasses and you don't know it's him and stuff,
I thought it would have been better if they just created their own superhero and used him in it. Instead of trying with the super, I think it was distracting because it was too much of a Superman story with the Lois character and all that, basically.
And
all
also,
that.
Like, I just don't like that guy either, that actor. Like, he does not strike me as a superhero either. Like, fucking Goku.
Nah, I remember that movie. That was a bad movie.
I don't remember his name at all, but like, overall, I'm sorry, like, he doesn't strike me as a superhero.
I thought it was
either. All
right. It was just like, it was okay. I was just really happy to see Doctor Who back. Because, you know, that's why everything got fucked up in 2016, is because Doctor Who wasn't here to save us.
How do you know the Doctor didn't fuck it up? Because the Doctor tends to fuck up a lot of stuff, right?
Yeah, but then he fixes it.
But what if he fucked it up so badly and 2016 is now, like, a fixed point in time and he can't fix it?
It would be fixed, like, no, because he's fucked us up, too, because there's no Time Lords. Well, I guess there is Time Lords now, but whatever the fuck. But, I think you said you thought Doctor Who was starting back in April, was it?
I think so. So, my teens and I were talking about that. In between, you know, bouts of Hamilton where, like, now they're insulting each other and they're shouting, "You're Aaron Burr!" I'm pretty sure they said that Doctor Who was coming back.
Yeah.
Which, I don't, like, I need to pay attention to that, but I don't really like Doctor Who. It's not my fandom.
No. But, like, overall in this episode, I wouldn't rate it as one of the better Christmas episodes. I liked last year's one, which I know you didn't see.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one with Nick Frost yet.
Which, who?
Nick Frost.
No, that was the one before that. Oh. It was the year before that when he played Santa.
I haven't seen either of them then.
The one last year I thought was better than the one with Santa. I thought they're okay.
I liked the one a couple years ago with those snowmen and, what the fuck's his name? Ian McKellen is the snowman, isn't he?
I don't think so, is he?
I swear, doesn't Ian McKellen narrate that one?
No, is it McShane? No. You might be right. I can't remember.
I'm pretty sure it's Gandalf.
Whatever.
And, like, you know how I love Gandalf.
But the Christmas specials are always usually, like, they're okay. Like, people try to expect too much.
And they're fun, too. Like, most of them are pretty fun.
And I agree with, like, somebody on a podcast I was listening to recently made a good point, and that's that at least this one wasn't really dark because the Doctor had been dark for so long. At least this Christmas episode had been lighter.
It was a mostly light one. I just didn't feel like it was super fun, though. And I really didn't like the main character who you were supposed to like that superhero guy. And the whole, like, crux of his story where he's, like, creepily, like, I'm gonna nanny for this chick that I'm in love with.
And I think, like it would have been better, actually, like, the thing about the Christmas episodes is they're always, like, big and there's a lot of energy and stuff. This seemed more like
blah.
A regular episode, yeah.
Blah.
The podcast I was talking about where they talked about it, like,
it seemed like something from the fucking WB, okay? Like,
it's like
I'm
happier,
sorry, the CW.
Happier for it to be, like, more upbeat was, like, the podcast is called Verity.
V-E-R-I-T-Y.
Yeah.
Verity.
And that's the first Doctor Who producer. Her name was Verity.
Oh, that's cool.
But it's a really good podcast, so if you want to check that out, they discuss that, too, that fact. But, I'm happy Doctor Who's coming back. And I think...
I like the new companion, like, from the trailer. Like, I liked her. She seemed
fun.
Yeah,
she seemed really cool and stuff. I know a lot of people's already going after her, and it's like, how can you be going after her? You haven't even fucking seen her in that episode
My favorite
yet.
Companion, though, is Martha. Like, I love Martha.
I do. I love Martha.
I really
too.
Liked Martha.
But I actually enjoyed all the companions.
She was smart. She was really smart.
Because, like, I liked Rose because she was a basic person. I also liked...
I hated Rose.
But I think the people that hate Rose, they hate her... But I think she's meant to be unlikable in a lot of ways, and it's almost like you're people take it as not liking, like, because she's meant to be, she's selfish. Rose is very selfish.
I really hated her because of the fact that, like, when she took off with the doctor and she came back, she didn't give a shit that Mickey had been, like, you know, brought into jail a bunch of times and questioned by the cops. She's like, shrug. And then, like, she'll take off with the doctor again, and then she'll pop back up and be like, Mickey, like, wants some time in the hotel or whatever. Like, you know, like, she shows up and wants to be fuck buddies with him.
But
I like Mickey.
I've always liked the fact that they tried to do different stuff with each companion. Because, like, okay, Rose is more of a love interest. And, like, she's kind of bratty. And she grows up as the series goes on.
Did she?
Yeah, but because in the end, she's, like, basically a hero. She's, like, a superhero and a soldier buddy. And
I like Mickey.
Yeah, Mickey does the same thing. Mickey becomes that way with Martha, like, who you like a lot. But then you have Donna, who's a platonic friend. My only problem with Donna was I didn't mind that they erased her mind at the end. I would have rather it been her choice for her mind to be erased.
Yeah.
Than the doctor really doing that. Than the doctor doing it because, like,
hey, did you flashy thing me?
Yeah, because I think sometimes they make it that the doctor has to be the one that always solves the problems. And, like, with the modern show that started out in the very first episode, Rose was about the companions having more,
autonomy. And
autonomy,
like,
and not taking away their self-worth and stuff.
I didn't like that.
I wish it would have been her choice. Like, if he had explained it to her and then she decided to do it, I think it would have been much better to have her erase.
Yeah, I agree with that. I know that it was supposed to be her character, but, like, I couldn't stand Donna. Like, she annoyed the shit out of me.
I found
her so annoying.
I didn't hate her character. It's all right. Catherine Tate, I like.
I find her annoying. Like, I don't really like her show either.
I like her show. My problem with her show is that the characters in it, I think, are better if they had been, like, one sketch. That's the thing about Python. You really don't see the same characters pop up multiple episodes. It's basically, like, they're used in one episode.
Like, yeah, like, somewhat. There are some, like, recurring ones, but.
But, like, in her show, you have the annoying mom character and annoying teenage character, and they're basically in every episode.
There's
four
a running
times.
Theme with that annoying.
She's the one they should replace Michael Scott with on Office, though. She would have been.
She
really
would have been
good.
A good
Michael
she
Scott.
Was one of she the, was only in like one episode or something, right?
But I liked all the companions.
Aww, that just reminded me. You know who should have been on The Office more? Timothy Oliphant. I love him.
Yeah, he would have been good. He's so sexy. But they were playing him straight.
I know.
Him play
they were wasting
comedy.
Him. He's so funny. Like, I love him. Anyway, back to Doctor Who.
But we'll end this by me asking you if you're going to do any Doctor Who programs at the library.
Probably, when the show comes back. Although, like, Doctor Who's popularity is kind of waned with my teens. The next thing I need to plan is apparently a Hamilton event. Because they are fucking upset.
But, if all details on Mar talks about her programs at the library and stuff on her podcast, Talking with Mar. So, like, that's once a month or whenever Mar's like, I want to talk about this! Like, probably Sherlock. Since you just watched that episode.
I do want to talk about Sherlock.
But if you check there, we'll probably talk about it when she does do a Doctor Who program.
Yeah,
so,
I gotta figure out what... That reminded me of, a quick story. I was reading Don't Let the Pigeons Stay Up Late in Storytime, and apparently one of my renditions of it, because I read it, like, three times in one day to different groups, and one of my renditions came off very drunk instead of sleeping. So, food for thought. I had a very drunk pigeon.
Isn't there a pigeon Doctor Who parody thing?
There is. Don't Let the Pigeon Drive the TARDIS. I think there's a shirt of it. I'm pretty sure.
We'll end with that.
Yeah.
People remember Don't
Let the Pigeon Drive the TARDIS.
On the Wikipedia entry for the return of Dr. Mysterio, continuity notes. At the beginning of the episode, the Doctor is constructing a device to reverse the paradoxes created during his previous visit and the Angels Take Manhattan. The Doctor mentions that he usually gets an invasion every Christmas, a reference to the different invasions of Earth taking place during most Doctor Who Christmas specials. The unnamed brain-swapping aliens that appear in the 2015 Christmas special, The Husbands of River Song, were servants of King Hydroflax. Their main agent, Scratch, stated that they represented the soul of the Winter Harmony. The Doctor tells Lucy that he works for Scotland Yard, which he also did in The Woman Who Lived. Previously, the 10th Doctor told the guests at Lady Eddowson's Manor he was a chief inspector from Scotland Yard in The Unicorn and the Wasp, while the 11th Doctor told President Nixon he was an undercover operative from Scotland Yard codenamed The Doctor in The Impossible Astronaut. A movie theater across from Lucy's apartment features a film called The Mind of Evil, the name of a 3rd Doctor serial. When the Doctor complains that Grant promised him to never use his powers, Nardole brings up the Time Lord policy of never interfering with other peoples or cultures, first mentioned in the 2nd Doctor serial, The War Games. Both the Doctor and Nardole, and sorry if I say that wrong, refer to the final 24-hour night the Doctor spent with River Song and her eventual death in the library in the Forest of the Dead. Of those continuity things, the one I don't remember from this and don't get where it fits, and I'd have to rewatch it to see, is the Doctor constructing the device to reverse the paradoxes created during the Angels Take Manhattan. I know there's paradoxes created there, but, you know, freaking Doctor Who's full of paradoxes. Like, I guess it's with the huge, you know, Statue of Liberty Weeping Angel, so I don't know if that's just, you know, I like Stephen Moffat, but sometimes he gets, like, he's masturbatory when it comes to paradoxes and time travel crap, so maybe that's just more of that with him. On the date of original broadcast of this episode of Doctor Who, Turkey probes around 10,000 social media users for allegedly insulting government officials or supporting terror-related activity. This was reported by the BBC. And it's probably the future of this country when it comes to social media things. I mean, that's one of those things we all know is happening, but we should be really angry when we find out it is happening. And it's just going to happen more and more until people finally decide to stand up to stuff like that. Afghanistan's first female Air Force pilot files for asylum in the United States, and that's reported by Rutgers. I hope that person finds what they needed here in the United States. That's what supposedly one of the things our country's supposed to be founded on. And also a magnitude 7.7 earthquake in Chile's first tsunami. By the way, I never say that word right, so sorry, but tsunami warnings. And that was reported by the BBC. Also, if you feel up to it, stick around after the theme music here, and we'll be part one of a fiction story series, The Darkness Bite. This will be the first part of that, and there'll be a part of in every episode of Brain Leakage. Like all other Tim Pod Radio shows, will have a audio story connected to every episode of every show, and an audio fiction story. So I hope you stick around for that and enjoy it.
Oh, I've been waiting in the airport bar for hours. Yeah, I've been wondering if they're gonna make me drink all day. Last call, calling on a non-stop back to the heartland. They're calling on your getaway. Falling till they make you give up your guns. rider on the Jubilee down to the high street. Oh, Rue Britannia showed you how to rise and fall. Oh, I remember the 4th of July up on Hempstead Heath alone. Ain't no rockets, red glare. Don't you know that nobody cares about another lost ugly American in this town? Preachers reaching out. You've been lonely and you've been lost. Oh, I know it's true. But every American girl thinks she's run out of time. London is calling. Calling, calling. Ooh. Calling.
The Darkness Bite, number 1, Hell, written and read by Brian C. Williams, copyright 2012, System Publishing, 2017, System Audio. A few weeks ago, there was a story online about this lady who was working in a mortuary. You might have heard something about it. It was retweeted, shared, pinned, and talked about in funny and boring ways. And it quickly multiplied its way across the internet, losing facts here, gaining interesting facts there, fictions everywhere, but only a few television networks reported anything about it. They were afraid of the content of the story. The internet ain't no afraid of anything like that. The mortuary worker was dressing a recently passed old man, a very wealthy recently passed old man. While doing so, she noticed his body had a huge erection. That's a natural thing, and sort of a God-style joke that the biggest hard on any man would get is after he's dead. Afterwards, and after the fact of fucking a dead old man, that dead old guy, and getting caught, she told people she just saw it there, thought he might as well fuck it, somebody should fuck it. There was a dick. She wanted to fuck a dick, so she fucked a dead man, and his dick. Now, you might not expect a story to start this way, but she didn't expect a dead man to come either. I guess that's a natural thing also. Man, nature's really fucked up. She was sitting in a prison cell for fucking a dead guy when she came up with the idea to sue the dead guy's family for child support. Yep, she was now packing a dead man's parasite. You might say something like, sometimes that's just how the world works. It's really fucked up sometimes. Well, you haven't heard the story, the whole story of Miss Dead Man Fucker. While Miss King Handler, her real name, was in jail, awaiting her trial, and waiting to hear back from her lawyer about security cameras, which were placed in the room because someone suggested she might be suicidal. Those cameras, if they're there, we were there, caught a very horrifying scene unfold. She wasn't suicidal, by the way. Her lawyer just wanted her to be kept from the rest of the prison population for as long as possible. Plus, the whole possibly being suicidal story would help sell books later, when it came to that. But without those cameras, we would not have seen what took place. The guards who were set to monitor her by camera claimed nothing happened when they were doing their job and monitoring her cell, and it wasn't until her lawyer and the warden reviewed the videos later that everyone saw what happened. Either way, what came to pass. She was sitting on her bunk reading through some materials her lawyer wanted her to become familiar with. Then for a brief second, the video froze into a Photoshop chrome effect before returning to normal. But when the video did return to normal, she was no longer alone in her cell, standing in the shadows. In a corner of the larger than normal suicide watch cell was also a smaller than her, very overweight, completely naked, sort of female looking creature. When she moved out of the shadows, the camera could see her skin was covered in huge blisters and spitting spews from the spores, or pores, more like pores. She grabbed King around the mouth with one hand and reached around with the other. First, her attacks were ripping with her long and sharp fingernails to slash away King's shirt. Then her fingernails started to dig into the chest flesh, and when her fingernails were full of skin, she started to push them into King's chest and pulled and tossed, ripping and finding its way in onto the bunk with big, huge bunk chunks. First, the bunk was full of chunks of flesh, then organs, and finally a few broken off rib bones. The creature picked King up and laid her gently on the bunk afterwards. Then it reached into her own body and pulled out a larger than normal fork and knife combo. She spat on the body and it caught fire, burning fast, and then the flames went away. A good barbecue method, if you ask me. And then there's the story about the hipster pothead, neighbors of Ton, Kentucky. Yep, that's Ton, Kentucky. T-O-N, Kentucky. Ton was a hard worker. Ton was a work person from home sports writer, doing that home sports work writing. He freelanced for several big websites and a sports writer who never left his apartment. He had this thing about the outside world. He thought it all was out to get him, eradicate him, munch his spirit away to live or die. The nearest threat to his existence was his across the hall neighbors. Ton hated his noisy hipster pothead neighbors. They ironically had tattoos and ironically left their trash outside their door for days and ironically were racist and ironically were stupid and actually stupid. He watched them out of his peephole when they came home high or drunk, or left high or drunk, or when people came knocking at all hours of the day to buy from them high or drunk. One of the things that really bothered him about his neighbors was that they always had their door wide open. They kept it that way almost all day, every day. Didn't they know about the world? Didn't they know the world was out to get people like him? They were letting the world in. Mistake. 3 days ago, when two young female hipsters were waiting outside their friend's door for their friends to show up to smoke skunk and throw around words like retard, black, and bitch, Ton hated these hipsters. Did I mention how much he hated these hipsters? When he said the word hipster, he said it like he was talking about Nazis or a group of profoundly tuned serial killers. When he typed online, he typed it hipsters, aka Nazis. One of the young women left. He overheard to pick up some burgers, leaving her friend to sit down in an apartment building's breezeway and flare up a cigarette. Ton was looking through the peephole, which is where he spends about 4 hours out of every day, when he witnessed a hairy-like shadow snap into view and grab the young woman. The creature slit her throat. As she stood trying to scream with blood pouring down the front of her clothes, the shadow thing picked up her cigarette and took a few puffs before it quickly tore her head off and started to chew on the skull. The sound of the skull cracking and the creature making it to the soft, chewy brain inside made Ton throw up a little in his mouth. He chewed that down as he watched the shadow creature as it reached its dark fingers into the skull and snacked on what was pulled out. Tan turned his view to one side to see the woman's body still standing, as if it was waiting for its head to be returned. So it continued on its night of mocking fun. This was the story he gave the police when they came today inquiring in the neighborhood about the reported missing woman. The police thought he was high, but the smell of skunk was from an apartment across from him. Those were only two stories of the many demonic events that have grown to be a worldwide epidemic over the past few months. The first few were just seen as strange stories, unsolved mysteries, crazy illogical happenings, but then more and more, and everyone had to start to acknowledge that something out of the norm was going on. There were so many tensions that usually are there when dates are approaching that some see as the end of the world. But after the year 2000 passed, with little to nothing supernatural or global happening, besides the same old of political human meandering or marauding, with the year 2013 approaching, no one was giving it much thought. Not even that many people trying to make a quick buck off people's fears. But now people are paying attention. Though I don't think the Mayans ever predicted skull slurping. Skull cracking, yes. No slurp slurp, though. Six teams from six nations. The United States, Australia, Great Britain, Egypt, Canada, Japan have been put together and sponsored financially by the Catholic Church. Who else has this sort of throwaway income? Making up the teams are some of the best each nation had to offer, from their most brilliant and from their militaries. The teams are being sent to one of the legendary six gates of hell to find out if this truly is the end times. Two days ago at the Vatican, where all the teams were gathered to share information, an event took place that tried to stop these missions before they even set about on their journeys. That attack was stopped by a man from another world. Now he's leading the American team on an air flight to one of the gates of legend. What they find may even surprise him. Probably won't, but let's see anyways. A Grumman C-2 Greyhound U.S. military cargo plane was going through some bumpy weather. It's a retired military freight aircraft they use now for unofficial missions. By using that retired aircraft, it gives any mission a certain amount of deniability. The atmosphere within the plane was actually pretty relaxed. Well, as relaxed as you could be flying on such a mission, and the ride being so bumpy that all asses aboard were throbbing. At one end of the plane's cargo hold was a group of 10 soldiers. Not 10 soldiers, 10, like the number 10. 10 good soldiers, with each their own specialty, made up from different branches of the U.S. military. And at the other end, some of the best scientists America had to offer. Yes, we still have scientists. It's not illegal yet. The might and intellect were represented across the board pretty good on this plane. Sitting in the middle of the cargo area, alone, reading a newspaper, was the wild card of this bunch. A strangely dressed man who appeared to be in his mid-30s, but when anyone stared into his eyes, they got the feeling they were staring into history for some reason. The man's strange dress was in description from bottom to top. World War II British Army boots, a silver and neon green pinstripe suit, and sitting beside him was a very old brown winter jacket with winter gloves sitting on top of it. The man's close-cut, dirty blonde curly hair and pale skin gave him a dead-like appearance when he sat still for any length of time without moving. A young soldier sat down beside Serenity. He looked hardly old enough to fuck, more or less, fire an automatic weapon at something demonic or otherwise. But he wasn't chosen for this mission because of his dead sharp marksmanship. It might not be expected when looking at him, but he's an explosives expert too. That was pretty strange at the Vatican. Do you think that's going to be the craziest thing we see? The young soldier asked. Serenity tried to fold up his paper but failed, and violently threw it away. He moved his hands through the air as if he was shooing it away as it fell to the floor of the cargo hold. On the planet of singing eyes, I saw the rain falling from the clouds, attacked by a demonic takeover, Serenity said. The young soldier's face turned paler than Serenity's. He got up and went back to join his fellow soldiers. His commanding officer gave him a look that said, I told you not to talk to him. He had experience working with Serenity, this commanding officer did. Serenity stood and walked to the back of the plane to join the scientists, who were deep into a very detailed conversation about solar radiation levels at sea level. He ignored their conversation and interrupted. A rather crude way to get to our destination, don't you think? Even for this back-shafting planet. The leader of the scientists, a Dr. Post, looked up at Serenity. Your presence is a military decision, but I'm still mission leader. So the choice of transportation was my call, and only my call. Yes, yes, the captaincy of the tugboat is still yours. Don't worry. You're wasting my time with this prat, Dr. Post. You have no idea what you're heading into. And what are we heading into, Mr. Serenity? In all the infinite of all realities, there's only one hell. That book you wrote about all the uncountable number of realities is true. So many Earths, so many fairy tale lands, and so many heavens, but only one hell. You know why that is, Doctor? Why? Because that place is so perfect in its evil, vile nature. It couldn't even be copied in any unfocused way or focused way. In the whole of everything, there is nothing more clear in its undertaking than that of hell. And if it's hungering for your world, you're done. There's no fight. There's no battle. Your existence is over. Serenity returned to his seat, mockingly, saying to himself, though it's not as Gaiman described it, thankfully. The cargo plane is silent except for the sounds of the plane battling against turbulence for hours straight until the silence was broken as the pilot clicks switches and clicked on an open intercom so everyone can hear an incoming message. Reports are coming in from all over the U.S. about a lot of bizarre things happening. One report is about Alcatraz National Park. An hour ago, clouds appeared over the sky. When the clouds turned dark, they started to rain blood and bone. After the rain stopped, thousands of zombie-like creatures started marching out of the prison and walking into the waters that surround the park. They are, at the moment, swimming out in all directions towards landfall. Local National Guard and military forces are organizing responses for when they reach land. Another report from outside Athens Lunatic Asylum is of screams of children. When investigators went inside and searched every inch of the grounds, they found nothing. The screaming is still going on after 6 hours straight. The Dock Street Theater has caught fire, deflamed, and caught fire again, over and over again, for now going on an hour straight. More and more reports are coming in, more and more than anyone can keep track of. Everyone turned around when the intercom stopped. Serenity flipped an off switch for it. Enough of other people's fear. You will be facing enough of your own. Stop listening to that shit. It's been a 2-hour foot trek through the heart of Nicaragua to a huge hole in the ground called Mazaya. There are 3 other holes in the ground called Mazaya, but those are just tourist holes. This is the main hole in the ground, Mazaya in Nicaragua. It also has another name, the Mouth of Hell, Serenity said to no one in particular. Dr. Post walked to catch up with Serenity and the military commander who were leading the party. How dramatic of you. But this is all there is. We've wasted our time. Serenity stopped everyone's march and stopped himself. Stopping is something they are very happy to take part in, having been on a march through forest, mud, and poisonous insects for 2 days without any breaks. The hole, though impressive with its size, smell, and smoke, doesn't look that supernatural. Things that don't look too far out of the ordinary can be some of the most dangerous. Serenity walked over to stand by a cross, an old cross stationed at the hole's edge. Do we go down there? Asked one of the soldiers after looking down the hole and getting a face full of sulfur and a very sweet taste on his lips. There's a cave a few miles east that will lead us down to its native hole, Serenity told him. This is just the lips of the mouth. Time to get near the throat. Have you been here before? Sure seems like you know a lot about this place, Dr. Post questioned. Serenity turned and started leading everyone east. There aren't many places I haven't been, Doctor. The trip to the cave took a few hours, and the one through the cave even more hours. They entered the cave at night and came out during daybreak. They're lucky they aren't in some old sci-fi movie, because at least one would have fallen to his death and a couple found dead because of a cave in behind them. But this wasn't that sort of cave. Second, but this might be that sort of story. Might. As the last of them exited the cave, the sudden shine of light pushed anger and a migraine into Dr. Post's head. I still don't know why my team's even here. This trip's a total waste of time. Total bullshit. People need to get their stupid, outdated religious views away and deal with the chaos of life. Serenity walked towards Dr. Post, who instinctively backed away from him. The soldiers are here to fake hope. You, Doctor, you and your colleagues are here to spout nonsense about what you think is happening. And why are you here, then? To let you know whether what we find would just kill us or your world. Everyone stopped for a second and stared at Serenity. But maybe we'll just find a closed door, and all these outdated religious signs are just part of a planetary hiccup. Serenity turned from Dr. Post and walked back to the real mouth of the hole. Stinks even the closer you get. Last time I was there, I couldn't smell anything for years. Oh, and if anyone was wondering what that sweet smell mix and taste was, it's burning flesh. Everyone started looking at each other. What? It's hell. You know, all burning forever with regenerating flesh and fresh pain over and over again. What did you expect from hell? Serenity pulled from his jacket pocket a large coin. What's that? Asked the soldier. A piece of Roman silver. I used to have 29 more, but lost them in a bet with a red-headed woman. And what are you going to do? Toss it in and make a wish? Asked Dr. Post. Why, yes, Dr. Post. That's exactly what I'm going to do. Serenity flipped a coin into the air, and for a second it looked like as if it stopped in midair for a moment, and then started to fall down, tumbling side over side, end over end, into the ground opening. What now? We wait. Charon? Maybe? What's that guy's name? I forgot that guy's name. Charon? The soldier said. No, but good for your known knowledge. The coin is like testing whether a standing pool is water or jet fuel. If the door is open, it's jet fuel, the knowledgeable soldier said. On the nose. Give the man a promotion. There was silence, except for a sudden kicking up wind. For a good 20 minutes, the hairs on people's necks and arms were paying attention. Animals, insects, and then a large, loud trumpet sounded from above the clouds, and half of the group dropped dead, leaving 3 soldiers, 2 scientists, and Serenity to remain standing. Dr. Post dropped to his knees in tears. It was a feeling that was attacking all of them. One of the remaining soldiers snapped the safety off his assault rifle. What happened? What happened? He said in panic. It's an answer, said Serenity. And what was the fucking question? Asked another soldier. Asked if anybody was home.